Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI.
Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're tackling a book that, well, it fundamentally changed how millions of people look at their dinner plate. Myself included, actually.
Absolutely. It's a big one.
We are diving into Michael Pollan's, you know, his defining investigation, The Omnivore's Dilemma.
Yeah, and it's such a monumental work because it takes what seems like the simplest thing, right? What should I eat?
Right. Dinner tonight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it reveals it as, well, probably the most complicated moral, ecological, and health decision we face every single day. Pollan basically argues that in our modern world, we've just lost touch.
Completely lost touch.
Yeah, with the traditions, the knowledge about where our food actually comes from.
We've basically swapped tradition for, well, confusion. I mean, if you think about our great-grandparents.
Yeah.
They mostly ate what they grew or what was nearby, right?
Mm-hmm. Local, seasonal. But today, you walk into a supermarket. Oh. It's mind-boggling. 40,000 different food choices, maybe more. That feeling, that like overwhelming anxiety, there is exactly what Pollan calls the omnivore's dilemma.
It's the core problem for us as omnivores, isn't it? Because we can eat almost anything.
Yeah.
How do we possibly know what's safe, what's healthy, what's good?
Yeah.
And instead of culture or tradition guiding us, now we're guided by food scientists, lobbyists, endless conflicting diet advice. It's bewildering.
So our mission today really is to follow Pollan's journey. He sort of maps out this whole terrain of modern eating by tracing four very distinct food chains.
Right. The industrial organic, the pastoral, and then the hunter-gatherer.
And he does this to find out the real costs, you know, the hidden costs of what lands on our table.
And honestly, we couldn't ask for a better guide than Michael Pollan for this. He's a journalist, a professor. Mm-hmm. But what really sets him apart, I think, is his mix.
What mix is that?
Well, it's nature writing, cultural criticism, and some serious investigative rigor. He doesn't just, you know, sit back and read the studies or policy papers.
That's so true. He's what you'd call an experiential journalist. He doesn't just observe. He, like, dives right in, gets his hands dirty.
Totally. For this book, didn't he track a steer through a feedlot?
He did. A really grim industrial feedlot. And he worked on regenerative farms, shoulder to shoulder with the farmers. He even learned to hunt wild boar and forage for mushrooms. All for one meal he put together himself.
See, that boots on the ground approach, that's what makes the book feel so visceral,
mm-hmm.
so real.
Yeah.
He takes these massive, complicated subjects like biochemistry, government farm subsidies, soil ecology, all that stuff, and translates them into personal, relatable stories. You connect with it because he lived it.
And what's really powerful, I think, is how he manages to critique this enormous industrial food system without ever sounding like preachy or overly sentimental.
Agreed. He approaches it with this sort of smart layman's curiosity, doesn't he? He forces us, the readers, to ask, okay, if I really saw how this food was made, would I still want to eat it?
Such a crucial question.
Mm-hmm. And the structure of the book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, it's actually, well, it's brilliant in its simplicity.
How so?
Pollan lays out his investigation, not just as chapters, but as the sourcing of four very different, very consequential meals. It's a narrative framework that really peels back the layers on the hidden costs, environmental, ethical, health of each system.
Okay, so let's walk through those. The journey kicks off with the meal that, let's face it, dominates our society, the industrial meal.
Right, the fast food meal.
Exactly. Yeah. He traces the cornzea maze, as he calls it, that fuels practically everything, from those vast Iowa fields right to a typical fast food burger, fries, and a soda.
And it's a chain completely built on cheap fossil fuels, chemical fertilizers, and this overwhelming reliance on subsidized corn. It's the lowest common denominator, basically.
Then the next step seems logical, right? The industrial organic meal.
Yeah, the kind you might pick up at a big chain like Whole Foods.
But Pollan digs into the contradiction there, doesn't he? How this organic movement, which started as this kind of countercultural, ethical thing.
Rebellion, almost.
Yeah, how it's been kind of mainstreamed and frankly, co-opted by big business.
That's the really tricky part people often miss. He points out that big organic, as he calls it, can actually mirror the industrial system's problems.
Like what?
Well, huge monocultures, just growing one thing. Long-distance transport, burning tons of fossil fuels, reliance on massive centralized systems. Even if they aren't using, say, synthetic pesticides, the underlying structure can still be problematic.
So it really makes you question, what's the real value of organic if the system making it is still kind of exploitative?
Exactly. But thankfully, the book doesn't just leave us in that industrial darkness. It offers a couple of genuinely hopeful alternatives.
Okay, good.
There's the pastoral meal. This takes us to Joel Salatin's Polyface Farm down in Virginia. It's a system designed around regenerative agriculture. It actually works with nature, with the ecosystems.
We'll definitely dig into that more. And the last one.
The final meal is maybe the most intimate and the most challenging. The hunter-gatherer meal.
The one he sourced entirely himself.
The very one. He learned how to identify wild plants, how to hunt game. It's like the ultimate act of reconnecting with your food source, right?
Total responsibility on the eater.
But as he points out, it obviously not scalable for, you know, feeding a city of millions.
Right. Okay, so let's dive deeper into that core conflict. You mentioned the industrial food chain is the behemoth here, and it all runs on corn.
Corn. ZMAs. It's incredible, really, how engineered its dominance is. It's not like it's naturally the perfect food for everything.
Especially not for animals designed to eat grass.
Precisely. But government policies heavily subsidize it, which leads to just massive overproduction. So this surplus corn has to go somewhere.
And where does it go?
It gets processed into cheap sweeteners, like high fructose corn syrup, which is in everything. Or, maybe most problematically, it's fed to animals, particularly cattle, that are biologically designed to eat grass.
And pollen gives us that really stark example, right? Steer number 534.
Yeah, that's the heartbreaking case study. He tracks this one animal's life, its path to a CAFOFO.
What's a CAFO again?
A concentrated animal feeding operation, basically a feedlot. You picture these vast, dusty, crowded lots, thousands of cattle packed together, often standing in their own waste.
Grim.
Very. And these animals, they're ruminants. They're built to graze, to digest fibrous grasses. But they're fed this energy-dense corn because it's the absolute cheapest way to fatten them up quickly for market.
But that diet makes them sick, doesn't it?
Chronically sick. Oh. It causes serious problems like liver abscesses. And it creates conditions where dangerous bacteria like E. coli can flourish.
So how do they survive?
Well, that's the thing. They require a continuous low-dose feed of antibiotics. Not to cure infections, but just to keep them alive and growing in those conditions until they're slaughtered.
Wow. Okay. So that leads us straight into the first big theme or takeaway from the book.
Definitely. It's what Pollan calls the illusion of cheap food.
Explain that. When you see that low price tag on, say, a package of ground beef or a fast food burger.
That price is only possible because the true costs, the real costs, have been pushed somewhere else. They've been externalized.
Externalized where?
Well, onto us, really. We pay through taxpayer subsidies that warp the market in favor of corn and soy. We pay through the massive environmental costs and polluted water runoff from feedlots and fertilized fields.
And we pay through public health crises, right? Like obesity, diabetes, often linked to diets heavy in processed foods derived from that cheap corn.
Exactly. The cost isn't gone. It's just shifted, moved off the corporation's balance sheets and onto society and the environment.
Okay, so that's the industrial picture. Pretty bleak. But you mentioned hope. Let's contrast that with the pastoral chain, specifically Joel Salatin's Polyface Farm.
Right. Salatin calls himself a grass farmer, which is already a totally different mindset. And his farm, Polyface, it's like stepping into another world compared to a CAFO.
How does it work?
It's designed as this masterpiece of ecological synergy. He tries to mimic natural systems, especially how different animals interact in the wild.
So like rotational grazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cows graze a pasture intensely for a day, then move on. They're followed a few days later by chickens in these mobile coops he calls eggmobiles.
Eggmobiles. I love it.
It's brilliant. The chickens scratch through the cow manure, spreading it as fertilizer, eating fly larvae, basically sanitizing the pasture naturally. No need for chemical fertilizers or pesticides.
So it's a closed loop.
Pretty much. Nothing is wasted. The system actively builds soil health and fertility, rather than depleting it like industrial ag often does. Salatin really emphasizes honoring the pigness of the pig, or the chickenness of the chicken, letting them behave naturally.
That contrast really highlights the next key theme, doesn't it? Which is
this connection.
Yeah. The industrial system seems to rely entirely on us not seeing how the sausage or the burger gets made.
Absolutely. If consumers had to actually witness steer, hashtag 534 in that feedlot, Pollan argues, they probably wouldn't buy the cheap meat that results from it. That invisibility, that lack of transparency is crucial for the industrial system to keep functioning.
It allows for abuses, basically, of the land, of the animals, sometimes of the workers, because the end consumer is shielded from that reality.
We've been systematically disconnected, Pollen says, from the most fundamental processes that sustain us, from our food sources.
So where does that leave us? What's the solution to this dilemma? Pollen suggests it starts with us reclaiming our role, right? Which brings us to theme three.
Eating as an ethical and agricultural act.
Explain that. It sounds kind of grand.
It is, but it's also really practical. The idea is that every single dollar you spend on food is essentially a vote. You're casting a ballot for a particular kind of food system.
So if I buy the cheap industrial meat...
You're voting to keep that system going. But if you choose to support, say, a local farmer at a farmer's market,
yeah,
or join a CSA, community-supported agriculture, where you basically subscribe to a farm's output for the season.
Got it. So if you choose those options,
you're actively shifting resources away from the destructive industrial model and towards more regenerative or at least more ethical alternatives. That gives you, the consumer, real agency, real power.
That's empowering. You know, one thing about the book is it's not just facts and figures. It's full of these really profound, memorable lines that stick with you.
Oh, definitely. It's very quotable. One of the big ones for me is, we are what we eat, but we are also how we eat.
Okay, unpack that. It's not just about the nutrients.
Right. It's saying the method of production. Did it deplete the soil or build it? Did it treat animals ethically or not? That method is inseparable from the food itself. The how matters just as much as the what.
That makes sense. What else stood out?
There's a broader philosophical point he makes. The way we eat represents our most profound engagement with the natural world.
Wow. So our food choices aren't just personal health decisions.
They're never neutral, according to Pollen. They reflect our deepest values about nature, about climate, about how we treat other living creatures. It's a big responsibility, really.
It really is. And he sums up the core problem so well.
You mean the line about the supermarket?
Yeah. The modern supermarket's cornucopia has thrown us back on a bewildering landscape of dietary choice.
It's that paradox, isn't it? All this abundance, all this choice has actually made it harder to eat well because we've lost the traditional guideposts, the cultural knowledge.
Okay, so for listeners who've been following along on this deep dive, they might be thinking, this is huge. What can I actually do today? How can we apply these ideas?
Pollen offers some pretty clear, practical steps. First off, become a food detective.
Sherlock Holmes in the grocery aisle.
Sort of. It just means reading labels. Rigorously. If you see a long list of ingredients you can't pronounce.
Or if corn shows up again and again, high fructose corn syrup, corn starch, maltodextrin, corn oil.
You know you're dealing with the industrial food chain. Pollen offers a great rule of thumb. Don't eat anything your great-grandmother wouldn't recognize as food.
I like that. Simple? Yeah. What's next?
Second, reconnect with cooking. Actually preparing meals at home.
Why is that so powerful?
Because it's fundamentally reversing the industrial process. Instead of buying a finished product, you're taking whole raw ingredients and transforming them yourself. It forces you to engage with where those ingredients came from, their story.
Okay, be a detective, cook more. What's the third thing?
Vote with your fork. Powerfully. Intentionally.
Meaning?
Actively seek out and support local food systems. Go to farmers markets. Join a CSA, like we mentioned. Find local producers.
But that stuff often costs more, right?
It can, yes. But Pollen urges us to rework our whole concept of value. Maybe pay a bit more for that chicken or those carrots, recognizing that the higher price often reflects the true, unsubsidized cost of food produced ethically and sustainably.
So it's about shifting priorities. Pay more, maybe eat a little less, but eat better.
Exactly. It's about quality and sourcing, not just sheer quantity or cheapness.
So wrapping this up, what's the big takeaway, the lasting insight from The Omnivore's Dilemma?
For me, it's how the book transforms eating. It takes this mundane, everyday act and elevates it into something deeply ecological and profoundly moral. The solution isn't some rigid diet plan.
No calorie counting required.
Not really. The solution is consciousness.
Yeah.
It's intention. It's recognizing that cheap food almost always carries significant hidden costs somewhere down the line.
Pollen's journey, his investigation, it kind of gives you back the knowledge that the industrial system works so hard to obscure, doesn't it?
It really does. The ultimate goal, maybe the true resolution to the omnivore's dilemma, is to confidently know the story behind your food. Where did this carrot grow? How was this chicken raised?
Knowing that story allows you to eat differently.
With gratitude, maybe, with intention, and with the confidence that your choices are actually supporting the kind of world you want to live in. That's powerful.
That really is the shift, isn't it? Realizing that just by making conscious choices about what you buy and what you eat, you become an active participant. You're not just feeding yourself, you're potentially improving the health of the planet and your own health too. It connects everything.
You beautifully put. It all comes back to the plate.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.